Hi, this is Jessica. I thought I'd walk you through behind the scenes on an astrology podcast. I host the astrology show every week, and this is how to go into the aspects and the transits that are behind the statements that you give to your listeners. So, this is an example of a Gemini birthday forecast for 2024 to 2025. And the first paragraph would read, "The really big news about May 21st, 2024 to June 21st, 2025, the Gemini birthday season is Jupiter in Gemini." Now, that needs no explanation. Going behind the scenes of that for the readers and the listeners, we basically have Jupiter in Gemini every 12 years. So it's rare, it's historic, and it's important because Jupiter is a symbol of everything people want to hear about. Jupiter is about growth, expansion, hope, optimism, opportunity. And rather than just flinging keywords around, I urge you to go back to the books or back to the websites that you trust. But a good library is your best friend. You need to know where the information comes from, and you need to back it up by finding multiple sources. So, just from that very first opening line, Jupiter in Gemini, it's rare, it's every 12 years, and it's beneficial. People want to know about it. Why and how it's beneficial, you go to your library. Next paragraph for a listener is Gemini. If you have an Aries stellium of four, five, six, or more factors in Aries, then your first house of image is also transited in your natal chart at the same time as your solar chart. So let's take that apart. What Gemini is experiencing is Jupiter in her solar first house, her sun sign chart. But she's quids in or has double the message, double the opportunity. If this woman, or perhaps a man, has a stellium or an unusually high cluster of Aries factors in the natal first house. So I'm sure you can see it's a double whammy. The house system that I use is the natural house system. So here we proceed with the script and talk about you're known by your name or your good name or even your notoriety. Your profile is important because it precedes you. Half the battle can sometimes be won with your advance on the internet because the image does the work for you. And what I'm doing here is just chatting about what it means to have an Aries stellium in the first house natally. And again, that's something that you would have, I think, to create your own script. You're going to have to do your own research with your own preferred library. But you should also go to history and see what happened to people who were born with an Aries stellium? What are they like? It's important to be true to the astrology and also to the symbolism and to understand what Aries actually is, what the first house and Mars actually means. And that goes back 2,000 years. On with the script. Whatever your chart looks like, Gemini, so no matter if you have an Aries stellium or not, Jupiter in your solar first house in the second half of 2024 and first half of 2025 will help you with your appearance, profile, reputation, and external self. Accessories like an intimidating car or a particularly impressive umbrella may be part of your approach. Well, expect better versions of the same or just more of them. This is true to the astrology of Jupiter. Jupiter is about better. Jupiter Optimus Maximus, best and greatest, is an old Roman deity, and things improve with Jupiter, but we also see more. We see an increase. Jupiter is known as the gas giant in astronomy. NASA scientists would know Jupiter as a giant, and so the idea of something being gigantic or bigger or expanding is a core part of the message. And accessories are always Aries, Mars, first house. The people who gave us our astrology today, the Romans, had a vine staff or a centurion staff, which helped with directions, but was also used to beat laggards. So that's part of the first house, too. The centurion staff features on many a Roman tomb. It's interesting that Gandhi, who had an Aries stellium, carried a stick. What you're doing here is your own research, really. You're being an investigative reporter as much as you are an astrologer and a broadcaster by going into the deeper layers of meaning of what the first house actually is. And that just requires a bit of work, but it's what will make your podcast stand out from the pack. So, for example, you might be researching a swagger stick, which is popular in the US Marine Corps. Speak softly and carry a big stick is an Aries or first house piece of advice. Perhaps a microphone or a stand is your stick, your swagger stick. All these ideas about the first house are so important to any Gemini listening. And you may find that people literally identify with what you're saying. Perhaps you have a Gemini listener who is entering into a Jupiter in Gemini transit, who is thinking about upgrading to a new walking stick, or you have a Gemini person who is thinking about making a podcast. It's also important to talk about the natal chart when you're podcasting, as well as the solar chart. Your biggest audience will always be a sun sign audience because it's the most popular house system in the world. Everybody knows about sun sign astrology. It's the front end. However, you also need to speak the language of astrology in a more complex way because today people are more sophisticated. Many of your listeners will already have their birth chart. So talk about the natal chart as well as the solar chart. I use the Natural House System for a natal chart out of over 30 choices because it's the one for me that complements the solar chart the best. The two house systems speak the same language. So back to the script or back to the podcast. When you're talking to a listener, you need to understand who your market is and where they're coming from. So there's no point in dumbing down for a millennial audience or an unsophisticated audience unless you think that that's going to pay your way. There is an awful lot of content online which is just that sort of market, but it may not be what you want. Something I will say about podcasting is that popularity does not equate business. So you may find that a free podcast that you put out for a younger audience or a less educated audience is popular, but they're not paying. They're not paying for any of your other products. They don't want a chart, they don't want a reading, and therefore you're left podcasting really for the fun of it. So you need to figure out, why am I doing this? What's in it for me? And how is it going to work in terms of the market that I'm aiming for? A very simple way to do it is just to speak to people who are like you or like your clients or readers who already exist. One of the things about podcasting going behind the scenes is that it's really important not to just parrot or repeat what you're reading or hearing elsewhere. It's boring for the listener and it gets you nowhere with your astrology. It's much more important to do your own research and your own original findings, creating your own script library, if you like, or your own bedrock of knowledge which you can turn to. So, for example, when we're talking to Gemini on a podcast like this, we will be talking about the eighth house. The eighth house is ruled by Capricorn in the Gemini solar chart, and we have had Pluto in Capricorn since 2008. So another thing to say when you're writing a script is you look for what's rare and what's historic. Where are the slow-moving planets going to? Where are the slow-moving North Node and South Node going to? Things that don't really matter are fast transiting aspects by the Sun, Mercury, Venus, Mars, and so on. They're much of a muchness unless they always tally or coincide with the slower moving rare transits. So, talking to a Gemini on a podcast like this, you would be definitely looking at the eighth house because in 2024, Pluto returns there for the very last time before he disappears for another 248 years. That's big. And Ceres is also in Capricorn this year, and that's big because she's also a slow moving dwarf planet, just like Pluto. So, what happens to Gemini when they're both in the eighth house of financial and sexual relationships, like a bank loan that you share with a husband, and family-based property relationships, like the apartment that your mother is going to leave you in her will? All of that is where it's at for a Gemini, and your listener will immediately identify with a slow-moving cycle because they've had a chance to really live through it. It's also fair to say that people turn to an astrology podcast not just for the good news, like a Jupiter transit, which we've just discussed, but sometimes they want to know when something will end. When they're going through a hard time, they want to know where is the light at the end of the tunnel. So you're on safe territory if you're talking about Pluto, because a Pluto transit is always really demanding. It's really challenging. It's about a change in the balance of power, and it's intense. It confronts you with your need to find the willpower to get through it. It challenges you to find the self-control. And all of this is really hard work over many, many years. So for Gemini listening, who's been going through this since 2008, you definitely have the ear of the listener with you. And then, of course, you have to say something helpful. And that's really where your skill as an astrologer comes in. Knowing what Pluto means and what Pluto is, knowing what Ceres means and what Ceres is, telling the listener when they leave Capricorn will win you loads of brownie points. There's nothing more reassuring and comforting than being told by an astrologer when a cycle is over. It lets you know how much of the marathon you have left to run. When you're also broadcasting to a listener, it's important to see it their way from their point of view. So you put yourself behind the eyes of a Gemini person, no matter what sign you are, and you see it their way. This is quite a good tip. And if you go back to the birth chart or the natal chart, and you realize that this person will have the sun in Gemini in the third house, you can make a true statement to them like this. You shine and stand out, or you don't, with your word power, with your ability to connect and communicate with images or the written and spoken word. This is how you gain attention and sometimes feel that you could try better, you could do better. This is an accurate description of the sun in Gemini in the third house. It's important to get your interpretation right. So many times you hear amateur astrologers or millennial astrologers getting the sun wrong because they haven't had enough experience to understand that the sun doesn't mean you are good at, you like. It's really common to hear that. So you'll hear people saying, with the sun in Gemini, you know, you're a great writer or talker. You might be in the media or you might be a teacher. That's completely wrong. With the sun in Gemini, you stand out. You shine, you are at your brilliant best when you get it right with the world of words, communication and connection. But you can get it wrong and you can be born with the chart where it's very difficult to do that. So it's more truthful to say to a sun in Gemini person that you were born with the sun in Gemini in the third house of communication. And when you try and when the fates are with you, you do get recognition for that. But it's not a given and it can take effort. That's a more truthful statement. You then go into transits like Jupiter in the third house, which will, of course, form a conjunction with that person's sun. And then you can get into really interesting territory by talking about what it means to have a transiting Jupiter conjunction. And if you go to tutors at the Sun Science School, Israel, for example, has just recorded a podcast about this. You can find up-to-date terms of reference to talk to a listener about what it means to have Jupiter on your sun for the first time in 12 years. This, again, will make your podcast stand out from the pack. Something else that's really important to do is to have a fundamental understanding of the layers of each house of the horoscope. So, for example, returning to our Gemini listener, this person will be going through Saturn and Neptune transiting the 10th house in Pisces. And the 10th house is the top of the mountain. It's career highs, it's academic highs, it's unpaid work, peak moments. But why is it so? For this, you go back again to your vocabulary as an astrologer, understanding that the 10th house is ruled by Capricorn, the mountain goat. So the mountain is a good analogy for the 10th house. Getting to the top, reaching the peak, climbing to the top, climbing the ladder. This will also be not just in astrology books for you, but in general reference books. So if you turn to your Webster's, for example, and you begin to circle around the idea of mountains and high places and mountain goats and ascension and climbing and mountaineering, you are going to get some really great phrases and analogies for your podcast. Of course, this takes work, but then it takes work to be an astrologer. One of the things about this game is that it is becoming more and more bland in terms of its language and in terms of its reach. It's becoming mainstream, leveled out. I'm not seeing an awful lot of original research there. And I think one of the reasons for this is that artificial intelligence or AI has actually blanded astrology out. Over the next few years, that's going to become a battleground for astrologers. But this brings me to a final point about podcasting for an audience. Whether you do what I do every week, which is the astrology show, or whether you just do an occasional podcast for listeners, it's very important to develop your intuition, your extrasensory perception, or if you are already a psychic, to deepen your work with the tarot or mediumship. Psychic astrology is really probably just astrology. An awful lot of astrologers are approaching the chart intuitively with their sixth sense without labeling it that way. But it is the difference between what we would call emerging new astrology and the old school. And the old school, unfortunately, will be rendered pretty much toothless by AI, as even now, AI training robots and programs are swiping huge amounts of astrology verbiage. So you need to be across the more personalized, personally identified, intuitive, psychic, or mediumistic horoscope interpretation. And again, that takes a bit of work. Psychic ability is kept going by practice. It's rather like being musical. You can be musical, you can be a great natural singer or a great natural guitarist, but you have to practice. So just getting into a routine with your tarot cards, for example, or with any other method that you use is a really good idea. Throughout the Sun Sign School and also my website, I habitually use Pamela Coleman-Smith's deck, commissioned by Arthur Waite. It's the Smith-Waite. And the reason for this is that they were two trained astrologers. Both of them went through the Golden Dawn, and both of them were taught about astrology symbolism. So the deck complements the horoscope, and the horoscope complements the deck. If you're not already trying that, you may want to have a go. In the 21st century, that will be the difference between your podcast and everybody else's.